yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Flint, Michigan, and earned a BA in psychology from the University of Michigan and an MA and a PhD in clinical psychology from Wayne State. Since 1998, he's been a self-employed clinical psychologist. And since 2016, he's been the president and CEO of Rochester University, which is a private Christian college in Rochester Hills, Michigan. His name, Dr. Brian Stockton. And I'm Jack Krasula. And this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible. And we're talking to Dr. Brian Stockner. Since 2016, he's been the president and CEO of Rochester University. Doctor, welcome. An honor to have you.
Thank you, Jack. I'm honored to be here.
Can we start by you leading us in an opening prayer this evening?
I'd be honored. Yes, let's pray. God, we're so grateful to you for the many blessings that you give us. We receive everything that's good as it comes from your hand with gratitude, and we give you praise and glory and honor. We pray that everything that is said and done here in this time together would give you glory. We pray in your name. Amen.
Thank you. Let's go back to your childhood, growing up in Flint, Michigan. Your childhood and your mom and your dad, please.
Sure. I grew up in Flint, Michigan, came from some interesting roots, I guess, particularly for somebody who's ended up in higher education. I did not come from a family that had a lot of formal education. In fact, if you look at my father's side of the family, my father grew up down in the Bayou country in Louisiana and had a 10th grade education. He was one of four brothers. And if you trace his family all the way back, as far as we can possibly go, as far as we can tell, I'm the second person to graduate from high school. His father was part of the group of people who moved up into the north to work in factories or to take advantage of economic opportunities after being in an extremely poor and deprived environment down in Louisiana. So I came from that background. My father worked for General Motors as an hourly factory employee. My mother did some odd jobs until both my brother and I were in school. And then she went back to school herself. And ultimately, by the time we were a little older, she had earned a master's degree and spent a career teaching in the Flint Public Schools. So even though, again, that I didn't come from a family with a lot of formal education, it was a family that put a great value on education. And Flint, for me, as I was growing up, was a great environment. I went to the Flint Public Schools, had great experiences there, had great teachers there that were influential in mentoring me and helping me. I still have a lot of soft places in my heart for Flint, particularly with the difficult circumstances that it has found itself in over the last several years.
Since 1998, that's 25 years, you've been a self-employed clinical psychologist. What inspired you to become a psychologist?
Well, you know, as I began my education, I actually was orienting myself toward ministry. And I studied ministry. I studied the Christian scriptures. And that was kind of what I thought that I would do. But in the type of ministry that I was doing, which I did for seven or so years full time, then continued to do it just as an avocation for a long time after that, I sort of was the kind of person that people seem to seek out to talk about their problems, to talk about their concerns, to share significant burdens. And frankly, I felt underqualified to deal with them. And I sort of felt a sense of call and vocation to study psychology. So there was that kind of pull. I'll also say that there were a couple of professors that I had at Michigan who were incredibly influential to me, and took a great interest in me, took a strong interest in me. One professor in particular who became a very close mentor and is still a close friend, literally saw me walking down the hallway past his office one day and called out my name, kind of came chasing down the hallway to get me. I was finishing up my undergraduate degree in psychology at that time. But based on the background that I had and the knowledge that I had and the culture that I came from, the idea of graduate school seemed sort of beyond reach to me. I was already married. I had responsibilities and I was working, and I didn't think the prospect of finding the time or certainly the money to go to graduate school would be a possibility. And this professor explained to me that there was a way that it could work. I became convinced. He continued to encourage me. And I think due to his influence and the influence of a lot of other good people, I began to pursue that work and have continued to find it to be incredibly rewarding and meaningful.
All right. As we stated at the outset, you're the president and CEO of Rochester University. Mm-hmm. When was the first time, Doctor, you walked on that campus?
You know, I actually was a student there for a year in 1978. It was Michigan Christian College at that time. And I lived on campus. Again, at that time, the institution was primarily a Bible college. I was studying ministry there. And it was during that year when I was on that campus that I decided that I probably should pursue psychology. And because of the nature of the institution at that time, it's changed drastically since then. But at that time, the offerings in psychology were pretty limited. So I made the move to a fine state university, but always felt a sense of the importance of Christian higher education. And I think I was influenced very positively even by that year that I spent there. And ultimately, contrary to what I would have predicted, ended up back there.
Speaking of which, we're talking to Dr. Brian Stogner. When we come back, we're going to ask him when he became a psychology professor in 1998 at Rochester, paint us a picture when we come back of Rochester University 25 years ago. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. We're with Dr. Brian Stogner. Doctor, 1998, you become a psychology professor at Rochester College. Paint for us a picture of that place 25 years ago.
Yeah, it was a place really in a great transition. My first job out of graduate school, I was actually working at University of Michigan Flint, had what I thought was a dream job. And for a couple of years, the man who was then the president of Rochester College reached out to me. He knew that I had this long-standing connection with the institution, or an old connection with the institution. And that president, a man named Dr. Ken Johnson, was working hard to transform the institution in some significant ways. He was moving it from a primarily two-year Bible college where people tended to transfer to other things. There was a business program there, but that was the emphasis of it. He was transitioning it to a four-year liberal arts institution that granted baccalaureate degrees. He wanted to build a strong psychology department, wanted to build strong programs in the liberal arts and sciences. And he persuaded me to come. And there were several new faculty members that came at that time as the institution was transitioning. At that time, there was also a name change that had happened just a couple of years before from Michigan Christian College to Rochester College. In an effort to sort of identify the institution more closely with its community, identify it more closely with a broader liberal arts or four-year emphasis, still with a strong Christian foundation at the very heart of what it was. At that time, it was about 600 students, mostly students who were from the religious tradition that it came from. But it was growing to become a more ecumenically oriented institution and really changing. It was an exciting time to be there. It was also a time where someone who was very creative and entrepreneurial could dream and have ideas and see those ideas and dreams come to fruition. And in the building of the psychology major in the psychology department there, I was able to do that. Found it to be incredibly rewarding. And it also was an opportunity to continue to build my clinical practice. And I still have great connections and great relationships with some of the students that I had. There was there in the late 1990s, early 2000s, a great bunch of people.
All right, 25 years later, it seems like only yesterday. Tell us about Rochester University today.
You know, it's an institution that has grown and changed drastically in those 25 years. It has continued to transition to offer more and more educational programs. We still are a faith-based Christian institution, a private institution. We're still small. I have about 1,200 students now, but we've broadened our degree offerings pretty extensively and have just now recently included some new degree offerings and added some degree offerings in fields like technology and data analytics, computer science, things that are definitely plugged into the marketplace. We also have strong professional programs, a school of nursing. Our school of business is very strong with an outstanding program, particularly in sports management and in nonprofit management. Also have a strong teacher education program and are in the process now of adding some additional graduate programs. So in every sense, we've become a university that is more inclusive and broad in its offerings and more connected to the marketplace, but still with that very strong foundation based on following Jesus.
We're talking to Dr. Brian Stagner. If you want to learn more, www.rochesteru.edu.
Right.
Doctor, we can't talk about Rochester without profiling two icons. First, Dr. John Todd.
Yes. You know, Dr. Todd is one of the real foundational pieces of Rochester University. When I first came to Rochester as an employee in 1998, John contacted me really quickly. At that time, he was a professor in our political science department, and I had heard about John. John was a man of immense character and courage and integrity, as some folks know, because John has developed a real reputation in the area. John served in the Vietnam War and was horribly injured. He was a Cobra helicopter pilot, was horribly injured in a firefight, experienced significant facial injuries and lost much of his sight and much of his hearing. Literally crawled out of the wreckage of the helicopter, saving the life of one of his crew members, and was awarded the Navy Cross for his courage and bravery there. After he got out of the service, he worked for the White House for a while, talking about the Vietnam conflict, then went to graduate school, to law school at Georgetown, earned his law degree, launched an amazing career. Even with those significant physical disabling conditions, and has influenced students for 40 years on the Rochester campus. Just recently retired, well-deserved retirement. And John's work and influence, frankly, was one of the things that really drew me to Rochester University, because this is a man whose character, whose love for God, whose love for his country, whose love for education was just inspiring. And it continues to be inspiring to me. A great man, a great supporter of our institution.
One of his traditions was he would always take new Rochester University professors to lunch.
Yes.
What was his message each time?
You know, I remember it as though it were yesterday when he invited me to lunch, remembering that John is was a man who was almost completely blind at that time. He came up to me and said, "Brian, let's go to lunch. You drive." So we went that day, and John wanted to really, his message, first of all, was very much about interest in the person that he was talking to. John was never a self-focused person. He was always and continues to be other focused. So he wanted to get to know me, and he always is interested in getting acquainted with new faculty members in particular, to learn about their interests, to learn about the research and the scholarship that they're interested in. And then with some cajoling, John will tell you his story. And what John continues to emphasize is the importance of faith in his life, the importance of looking forward and moving forward and continuing to grow and to achieve and to not let resentments or to not let regrets hold you back, and to not be inhibited or suppressed by difficulties or challenges that continue to rise above those things. And he communicates that in all sorts of ways, and communicates that with the folks that he gets oriented to the institution on those very important and meaningful lunch dates as well.
The name of the show is With God Anything Is Possible. And think about it, before Professor John Todd passes, because of autonomous vehicles, Doctor, he may well say, I'll drive.
Absolutely. I hope so, for his sake as well. I think he would enjoy that.
We're talking to Dr. Brian Stockton. When we come back, we'll talk about a second icon, a modern-day coach, Gil Thorpe, Garth Pleasant. And I'm Jack Brasil, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Brasillo. We're with Dr. Brian Stodner, Dr. Garth Pleasant, coach, preacher, husband, father, grandpa, professor, friend, and a storyteller. Bigger than life. Tell us about Garth Pleasant.
Yeah, Garth is a legendary figure, a living legend at Rochester University. Our arena, where our basketball and volleyball teams compete, is named after Garth. Garth and I share Flint roots. We both grew up in the Flint area, and we often, when we get together and talk, we will talk about the importance of those roots and shaping a work ethic and shaping the importance of understanding those roots and the way that we do our work job now. But Garth is a legendary figure because he coached for over 40 years, won an incredible number of games. He's in the Michigan Basketball Coaches Hall of Fame. But, you know, the challenges that Garth overcame to have all of those victories is what's really remarkable. The arena is named after Garth, but Garth didn't coach in that arena because Rochester University did not have an arena for that team to play in. And in our division, which at that time was a division of smaller colleges, Garth's teams won four national championships without ever playing a home game. Because we didn't have an arena for them to play in. They played in area high schools and in other places. But what Garth would tell you is that what's important to him is not all of those victories on the court. What's important to him is the hundreds of young men and young women that he influenced as a coach and as a teacher there. One of Garth's favorite things to say when folks would ask him, hey, what kind of season did you have this year? He would say, well, I won't know for 20 years or so when I find out what kind of husbands and fathers and citizens these players were. And that's the kind of investment that Garth made. Garth's son, Clint, who is now coaching for us incredibly successfully and carrying on that tradition, will tell you that Garth is not a basketball junkie. He's a people junkie. And he pours himself and continues to pour himself into people to try to shape and influence lives. So Garth's been an incredible influence on me and has had an incredible impact on our institution.
We're talking to Dr. Brian Stodner. If you want to learn more, www.rochesteru.edu. Speaking of influencing young people, what do all great professors have in common?
You know, I think there are a few things that I would put my finger on. I think that, you know, you hear the old saying, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And I believe that that's true, but I would also say for a college professor, I think what I would add to that is people really won't care how much you care if you don't know anything. So you have to have a combination of scholarship and a deep understanding of your field, but equally important with that is an interest in students as humans. The desire to invest in students and pour into students, not only information, but interest, connection. And I think great professors, truly great professors, are those professors who understand that the students sitting in front of them are not just names on a roll sheet, are not just numbers on a student roster. They are individuals created in the image of God who are there to develop and to grow so that that image could be more fully formed in them. And being able to invest in those students has been one of the great gifts that God has given me in my life.
Speaking of students, how have the students changed from 1998 till today?
Well, that's a great question. They've changed in all sorts of ways. I think students now are challenged more by the world around them, because as the world has changed around us, and some people would say maybe it's not the students that have changed so much as it is the world around them that has changed. Students come now with access to an immense amount of information. When in 1998, I was the content expert in psychology, and I had information that students didn't have readily accessible to them. That's really less the case now. There's not a whole lot that I or any other professor could share with a student that they don't have great access to over the internet or in some other way. All that information is there. And because students are so saturated with information, the challenge now for students as we work with them is to help them to take that knowledge and derive wisdom from it. To help them understand how to learn more and how to curate information and how to be a good consumer of information. I mean, one thing about all that information that's out there is that some of it's accurate and some of it isn't. And the ability to discern and to understand how to process that information effectively, that becomes more of the challenge for students now. And also, I think, you know, the world as in its growing complexity has become a little more intimidating for students. And I think sometimes a part of this, kind of going back to the question about great professors as well, to inspire students to feel a sense of optimism and hope about the future, in some ways now can be more challenging, because often the message that comes to students is, you know, things are going to be so tough that we're not sure you're going to be able to make it. So I think for us now, it's helping students who are so saturated with information learn how to curate it better, and then learn how to be lifelong learners. We talk about we're preparing students for jobs right now that may not even exist now. So a well-educated person who understands how to learn, who understands how to interact with people, who understands how to communicate, those are things that are an even greater challenge now for students than what they were 25 years ago.
Boy, in business today, you have to keep learning while you're earning. So,
Absolutely. Okay,
could you profile two students?
Boy, it's tough to think about just two, but two that come readily to mind. The first one that comes to mind, because I've had some conversations with him recently, is a young man named John. John grew up in Sandusky, Michigan, up in the Thumb, a small little town, played high school basketball there, and came to what was then Rochester College because he had an opportunity to play basketball on our small team. Was not, I think he would be the first to say that he, you know, was not a great star player, but he was a person of deep commitment, an incredible work ethic. John majored in sports management at Rochester College. And again, coming from a small town, not heavily recruited, not somebody who would, you know, just create any kind of flash or any kind of special attention when he came aboard as a college student. People at Rochester College invested in him. He got a great opportunity to do a sports management internship with the Detroit Pistons. One thing led to another. John is now, after graduating from Rochester College with a degree in sports management, he's now the general manager of the Milwaukee Bucks in the National Basketball Association, continues to have incredible success professionally. But again, having played for Garth Pleasant that we talked about, probably more importantly for John is the amazing success that he has as a father and as a husband. And as a Christian, John's a great example to us, and we're very proud of him. Another young man that I think of is a young man named Ron. Ron came from an incredibly deprived environment, grew up in Detroit, was homeless for significant periods of time during his upbringing, lived in his car even for a short period of time while he was a student until we discovered that that's what was happening. Ron had a significant hearing impairment, but it was undiagnosed, and he was embarrassed by it and essentially kept it a secret, tried to struggle through it. Every now and then, people who worked with Ron, teachers and staff members and coaches would kind of think, you know, that he was ignoring them or he was being obstinate somehow. We learned very near the end of his time as a student before he graduated that he had this significant hearing impairment and that he was doing everything that he could to cover it up. This is a young man who is so inspiring to think about because of the incredible obstacles that he overcame. He is now teaching in a school for students with hearing impairments and is determined to give back what was given to him. And when I think about, I get emotional when I think about this young man and the courage that he displayed and the amazing achievements that he has had in his life, overcoming all of those challenges. And what he would say is that he owes a great deal to the work and the all of the effort and the care that he got as a student. And I think when I think of those two students, what it kind of sums up is, What we work very hard at Rochester University is treating every student as an individual, treating every student and thinking of them holistically. So we're thinking of them not only academically, but spiritually, socially, personally. And our investment in these students is to try to help them develop and fulfill their potential, to develop and fulfill their aspirations. And these are two young men who I think are great examples of that. And they're both continue to be great inspirations to me. I think the other thing about Rochester students that's sort of amazing is, it's a cliche, but it's really true. They teach us more than we teach them, and they inspire us more than we inspire them as well.
We're talking to Dr. Brian Stockner and talking about teaching. When I come back, we're going to ask, what's the biggest thing you've learned in the 7 years as president, CEO of Rochester University? And I'm Jack Crisula. And this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR.
Jack Crisula, host of WJR's Anything Is Possible, the weekly radio visit, brings his 15 years of inspirational storytelling to hardcover. With God, anything is possible. Of Jack's more than 750 tales of defeating odds and achieving the extraordinary. Like Bob Woodruff, whose job covering the war in Iraq nearly cost him his life. And Nick Vujicic, the limbless evangelist who has stunned millions with his message of acceptance and grace. With God, anything is possible. Order now while signed copies are still available at trustinusllc.square.site. That's trustinusllc.square.site. And as Jack says,
make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohol.
Anything is possible.
Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Crisula, or with Dr. Brian Stockner. If you want to learn more, www.rochesteru.edu. Doctor, biggest thing you've learned in your 7 years as president, CEO of this university?
The biggest thing I learned would be you have to always be ready for anything and be prepared for surprises. They become the order of the day. You know, higher education is really in a crisis in the United States. And I think that's particularly true for Christian higher education, and also particularly true for small private institutions. There are incredible economic pressures on us. There are incredible regulatory pressures on institutions such as Rochester University. It's interesting, if you look at independent colleges, private colleges in the state of Michigan, many of whom are faith-based as we are, about half of those colleges have had a change in their presidency in the past two or three years. College presidents are transitioning and moving on to other things now because there are a lot of pressures and a lot of real challenges to overcome in this sort of crisis situation. So as a college president, you've got to learn to be focused internally on the well-being and the quality of the offerings and the programming that you do at an institution. You have to be focused on the people who work there and the challenges that they face. Certainly, all of those things were exacerbated and accelerated by the COVID pandemic. But you also have to be externally focused so that folks out there understand more about who you are and understand more of the value of what you offer. And I think as a president, you have to be able to roll with the punches. You have to be able to adapt. You have to be able to be creative. You have to be able to communicate well and listen well. I think in leadership roles of any sort, I become more and more impressed with the importance of being a good listener and discerning and listening carefully, not only to what people say, but to what they don't say, to listen carefully to the emotional underpinnings of what folks are talking about. And I think as you listen and discern those things, it helps you understand more clearly how to lead and how to direct an institution. And it's a difficult and challenging environment, and the ability to adapt, to be flexible, to respond to the needs of the environment around us and to the individual needs of students, just being tuned in to all of that, I think is really critical.
All right, you talk to any business person today, a huge challenge is finding enough good workers. Mm-hmm. They can't. You talk to any university president, they can't find enough good students. It's a war, doctor, for students. Talk about that.
Yeah, it sure is. It's a war all over the place, but it's an even challenging struggle in this part of the country. Demographic trends are not in favor of people who do work with 18 to 22-year-olds because there are fewer and fewer 18 to 22-year-olds. Also, fewer and fewer 18 to 22-year-olds that are interested in college education. I agree that there are some folks that perhaps as they're thinking about a career and perhaps as they're thinking about what they want to do with the rest of their life, maybe there are other options for them besides college that are good, that are reasonable, that would work well, that would provide a good income. But I would suggest that if you look at the data, if you look at the information, and this becomes one of the great challenges is to try to communicate this with clarity. The value of a college education has never been greater. And the value of a Christian college education has also never been greater. And I want to suggest that getting that message across is one of the great parts of the struggle that we're in. Understanding that a well-educated nurse or teacher or psychologist or electrician is someone who's going to be better at those roles because they're going to understand how to solve problems better. They're going to understand how to interact with other people in a way that they can discern the needs that their job is calling them to. And I would also suggest that the character, honesty, the work ethic, those sorts of things that are an important part of the values of an institution like ours are also things that all employers are looking for. They're looking for people who will bring them that good day's work for that day's pay. And that those values and that kind of ethic is an important part of the education that we offer. And getting the message out that there is great value in that is critical for us. I will also say that one of the big challenges in front of us, because education is expensive, and what's happening is that many people perceive that the cost of education is not only greater than what the investment is worth, which I believe is not accurate if you look at the data, but would also really believe that the cost of education is out of their reach, People are concerned about borrowing money for education. And I think those are all legitimate concerns. I would particularly suggest that for an institution that calls itself Christian, to do everything that we can do to try to make sure that this education is accessible to people who are not wealthy, that they don't have to indebt themselves with overwhelming loan burdens to get that education. Those are big challenges in the struggle. Those are things that we work very hard at Rochester University, and things that are a big part of the struggle to try to help students take advantage of the value that we offer at our institution and at others like ours.
Brian Stogner, anybody that meets and spends time with you walks away saying, boy, that was a soft, humble, calming confidence that that man has. How do we get that?
Well, I think that my faith is probably the most important element of what you've just described. I think that being grounded in faith and being a follower of Jesus for me is something that helps reduce anxiety, helps me to manage stress, because I understand that the immediate circumstances and the immediate stresses around us are not the final answer. In reality, there's something that's far greater than that and far deeper than that that we're pointing toward. I would also suggest that part of what it means to be a follower of Jesus is that you have a perspective that inherently is hopeful. And I think living by that hopeful perspective, that belief that ultimately, we are, history is moving in a direction in which God is going to bring about the fulfillment of his kingdom. I think if you take that perspective on things, it helps you to feel a little bit more calm in the face of difficult circumstances, and recognize that, I think sometimes confidence comes from maybe not taking yourself too seriously. I think it's important to take your job seriously and your work seriously and maybe not take yourself too seriously. So I think that is critical.
Dr. Stogner, you're a shining example of a servant leader. Thanks for all you do.
Thank you, Jack. It's been a great, great privilege and pleasure for me to be here. I've been an admirer of your work for a long time.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Prasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spoken.